All right, everybody, welcome to Live from My Drum Room. I'm excited to have my returning champion back here with me again today, Robin Flanz, who is not only my returning champion and a fantastic author, but my dear friend for many, many years. You might recall back on April 1st, on Jeff Beccaro's 70th birthday, Robin was here with me, and we had a surprise guest, the legendary Gary Katz, legendary producer for Steely Dan and many other artists, joined us, and it was incredible. I'd never met Gary, and this was kind of a surprise. Robin had alluded to the possibility of this happening, and Gary moved some things around in his schedule to make it happen, and it was such a treat and such a pleasure to have Gary on the show with us. And so that particular show took a little bit of a different turn and direction than what we had planned, which was to sort of really dig into this fantastic book that Robin has just written, Moments in Time, Jeff Beccaro's Stories. And so, you know, we sort of veered off this a little bit and got into some great stories that Gary shared about Jeff working with Steely Dan and, you know, and other artists. So I thought it'd be great to have Robin come back and we could dive back into this book and talk about some of the great stories in this book. And I recommend it. Hudson Music, of course, friend Rob Wallace and the folks at Hudson. So, and Joe Bergamini, of course. So you got to get this book if you haven't already. And don't forget its predecessor, which was It's About Time, Jeff Beccaro, The Man in His Music. And this came out in 2020, a fabulous book as well. Before I bring on my returning champion, Robin Flanz, I do want to just give a quick shout out to Jared Falk and Brandon Tafes at Drumeo, produced a fantastic video in honor of Jeff's 70th birthday also, and it was called The Genius of Jeff Beccaro. Drumeo is the absolute king of the hill when it comes to producing fantastic videos. They are just, you know, top-notch. Brandon Tafes narrates it and does some beautiful drumming along with it to kind of demonstrate some of Jeff's parts. Just thank them, first of all, for including a couple of my clips from a Live from My Drum Room episode from 2022 that I did with a big group of drummers. You might remember this. It was also on the Modern Drummer site, but I produced it on Live from My Drum Room. They were nice enough to use a couple of clips of Vinny Colaiuta talking about Jeff inside their video, The Genius of Jeff Beccaro. So I want to just give a shout out to the guys at Drumeo. It was a huge honor to have my clips included in this incredible presentation that they did. So thank you, Jared. Thank you, Brandon. I appreciate it. Thank you, everybody at Drumeo. If you haven't seen this video, check it out. It's called The Genius of Jeff Beccaro. It's about 40 minutes long and it's really well done. Fantastic stuff. All right. So without any further ado, please welcome truly my returning champion and my dear friend, Robin Flanz.
Thank you for having me, John.
It's always such a pleasure, Robin, always. So great to see you.
So, gosh, happy birthday to Joe Beccaro. I just can't believe how crazy it is that the last time we met, we were here for Jeff, and here we are for Joe. It's Joe's birthday, and how weird is that?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like speaking to the universe, I think. I have to say, it's still the biggest sadness I have about my first book, that he was so invested emotionally. He so couldn't wait for it to come out, and he missed it by like a week.
Oh.
He was in a unhealthy place. And even though I got the drafts over to him and Aileen, he couldn't. He just couldn't. And it was heartbreaking I mean, the whole, I mean, losing him and having him in that space was heartbreaking. But I was so devastated because he was so excited about this book and gave me so much information and love and respect and was so welcoming and so into it and so he was so wonderful and treated me like family. And I mean, they all did. I mean, Jolene and Steve and even the, you know, the Toto boys, I mean, they were all like family to me, but Joe was just, I love that picture. That what a, what
the crew.
What all of them such great guys. I mean, all of them friends and all of them just, I mean, what a great bunch of guys.
That's a pinch me moment for me, Robin. I don't want to interrupt your train of thought, but I look at that and for everybody watching this, and if when you hear the podcast, it's the photo is Marvin Smitty Smith, Rick Marotta, Joe Picaro, myself, Alex Acuna, Steve Schaefer, and Danny Serafin. I mean, heroes one and all.
Yeah.
Right across the board there. Yeah, that's a
sure.
And friends.
I don't know Marvin that well, but the rest of them are beloveds. I mean, Marvin is wonderful, but I just don't know him that well. But boy, oh boy, what a great group.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you absolutely, when I think of you and I think of the entire Picaro family, you know, your family, you still are. It's not past tense. It's present tense. Your family.
They are. They're family to me. And interestingly enough, I've become very, very close to Steve Picaro. He's been there for me in so many different ways. You know, just a quick little sidebar. I'm very involved with a nonprofit organization that helps young artists produce music and that promote social justice. And Steve has generously given his time and musical talents to several projects that we have produced for these artists. And he's been there for me. I mean, he came, of course, because of our friendship, but he's remained because he believes in what we're doing. And because, I mean, he's just been there for me for so many things. I mean, he contributed to the back of this book. And I mean, Jim Keltner's been there for me, for this nonprofit. I mean, my friends have really been with me on these things. And Steve Picaro and I have deepened our friendship through the years because of the contributions to the books. And he just has the biggest heart. I mean, the whole Picaro family.
Yeah.
It's just they were raised really well. I mean,
yeah.
It's just they're good stock.
They are. You're absolutely right. I mean, that's just the best way to put it is that, you know, Joe and Aileen are just, you know, I'm so honored to have gotten to know Joe. I got to know him in the 90s, long before he signed on with Zildjian, and he was still a Paiste artist at that time. And and I'll quickly just tell this story. The way I got to know Joe was, sadly, it was after we'd lost Jeff. But Joe had started making drumsticks. If you remember, he had his Diamond Tip series drumsticks. And our initial meeting had to do with the fact that we had just introduced or about to introduce a Louis Belson Diamond Tip drumstick, that Louis had come up with a name. And Joe was on the verge of introducing a whole line of sticks called Diamond Tip. And I think Joe was trying to trademark the name. So Mike and Steve came by the booth, and I had a brief conversation with them. And I said I would speak with Louis Belson about it. And, you know, it was at the NAMM show, and it was just I was more just sort of starstruck by the two of them, you know. And I hadn't met Joe yet, but it made perfect sense at that point. We received a letter. I guess I'd given one of them my business card, so I received a letter from their attorney. And it was, you know, it's what you have to do in these situations. And it was basically, Mr. Joe Picaro is in the process of trademarking the name Diamond Tip. We request that you cease and desist using that name. And so I'm getting choked up. So I talked to Louie, and Louie, of course, said, oh, absolutely. Let's just come up with another name. We'll just come. How about Saturn Tip, which was what it ended up being. And that was it. So I wrote a letter and I said, we're happy to give up that name and wish Joe the best. And then I met Joe, and as you know, he just in talking with him, we just hit it off so well. And I said, God, you know, Jeff was the world to me, and it ended up to us making his drumsticks for him, which was just so crazy. It went from, you know, us being a possible competitor to him saying, well, hey, how about if you guys make my sticks? I'm looking for a company. So we did that for many years, and it got us very close. I remember one summer, Joe and Aileen had come back to the East Coast to visit Connecticut. They made a detour through Boston, and we had dinner. My kids were really little at the time, and just the five of us, me and my two kids and Joe and Aileen, and they were really curious what my kids were into. And my daughter at the time was into these Beanie Babies. And I forget what it was. And it was one that we couldn't find somewhere. And Johnny, my son, who'll be 37 on Thursday, May 2nd, he was, I think, about 11. And he was into like Matchbox cars. So a week or two later, a couple of Matchbox cars show up, or Hot Wheels. And the Beanie Baby that my daughter Danielle couldn't find show up in the mail. And that's Joe and Aileen. So, yeah, just unbelievable people. And then, you know, to top it all off, about 10 years after that in 2008, I got a call from Joe one day. And I can thank our friend Rich Mangiacaro a lot for this, because Rich had left Peisty, and as it goes sometimes, you know, he was a big reason why Joe was there. And when he was gone, he called me and he said, well, you know, Rich is gone from Peisty, and I always loved Zildjian, and I always loved you, and so would you be interested? You once told me if I wanted to come over, I could come. I said, Joe, oh my God, that would be amazing. So so I was thrilled to work with Joe for the last, you know, 5 years of my time at Zildjian, you know, as an endorser, as an artist. So anyway, you know, I didn't intend to get so emotional here.
This choked me up, and I meant to put a damn tissue here next to me, and I didn't. What am I going to do? Use my blouse? Golly.
And I made you shut your fan off, so. Oh, man. All right. Well,
yeah. Right. And that's how they raised their children, you see. Every act of generosity that you see in the book about Jeff, or the books about Jeff, that's where these kids learned it. That's where Steve learned to contribute to this nonprofit. I mean, that's where these hearts are so big that, I mean, it's just, it comes from the parents.
And your book, Robin, your book, it's just chock full of examples of Jeff's generosity. And I don't know Steve other than meeting him a few times, but I will say that that photo that I took, the group shot of, that was taken of Rick and Joe and Danny Serafin and all of us. So that was at the Zildjian Artist Session in 2012. Now, I remember this clearly. It was May of 2012. From that artist session, I went to Rick's studio. No, sorry. I went to a Toto rehearsal where Simon was rehearsing with the band at a big, I think it was a hangar or something where you probably know where they had a full production rehearsal for a corporate event they were doing. And, so I went there to, as Simon's guest, and Joe and Aileen were there, and Jolene, and I just introduced myself to her. I don't know her, but she just seems so sweet, just like the whole family. And, so anyway, I'm saying goodbye to Simon. We're walking out and Simon said, so he had somewhere to go. He said, so now what are you doing now? Where are you going? And I said, I'm headed to Rick Murata's studio and then we're going to go have dinner over at, the Mario Batali place or Mozza. We're going to have a dinner at Mozza. And he's like, oh, well, give my best to Rick. Give him my love. And Steve Picaro overhears us. And he said, did you say you're going to see Rick Murata? And I said, yeah. And he said, can you give him a message? Can you have him call me? He said, I've been wanting to talk to him about something. So I get to Rick's studio and I give Rick the message and he said, where did you see Steve? You know, like he's, and he said, thanks. Yeah, I'll call him. Yeah. And he went on to talk about Steve. He said that he is the nicest guy. He said he will often call or text to check in and just, hey, Murata, hey, man, thinking about you. What's going on? What are you doing? But they're all wired that way. I know you can feel it.
Yep. They are.
Yeah. That's just incredible.
It's called upbringing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Where is it today?
I know. Oh, man. But,
okay.
All right. Well, so Robin, you know, I said this during the intro, I'll say it again to you. It was so amazing to have Gary on that other episode. Thank you again for that. Was just so amazing. Just, I'm still, you know, kind of over the moon over the whole thing. And I've watched it and listened to it. And he and I, and thanks to you, Gary and I have become friends and we've been in contact.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Thank you. Yeah. We had a phone call a week or so ago or 2 weeks ago. And we're going to definitely do something in the future. It's kind of on me to figure it out. I've got a bunch of things in the queue for the moment, but
good.
Thank you. So thank you for that.
I will tell you something, and it's true. I mean, it's what I put in my thank yous. Gary is the greatest gift that Jeff left to me.
Yeah.
You don't expect to make deep friendships at this age, but Gary is the salt of the earth, something really special. And I mean, Jeff has given me a lot. I have uncovered wonderful people in my journeys through these books. I mean, many wonderful people. I mean, it's just, Randy Goodrum just comes to mind. I mean, what a great human being.
Yeah.
And so deep with his feelings. I mean, to be thinking about Jeff and writing that song that I put in the front of the book, in just a few years ago. I mean, that he was so present in his mind to write that song. Randy's special. I mean, a lot of special people. So many special people.
Yeah, so many special people, absolutely. And it's no surprise, you know, it brings out the best of people and in people when you're talking about someone like Jeff, of Jeff's caliber, and because of the effect he had. I mean, again, your book, and I just, for anybody who hasn't got this book yet, you have to get it because it's chock full of people sharing stories about things that Jeff did for them.
You should read the first one first.
Yes, yeah, they should.
It refers to the first one a lot. Yes. I mean, you don't have to, but it's
a companion book. It really is. Yeah.
But yes, I never thought I would. I mean, and you know what? You want to know something, John? Since the second one came out, people are, I mean, it's making me nuts. I could tell you I want to go into a rubber room and let people certify me nuts. People are messaging me. I did this with Toto.
I have a story.
That.
Yeah.
I have a story. And I want to slit my throat. Where were you a year ago? It's killing me.
I think when you do the third book, it's going to happen. Not if, but when. It's going to happen again. No, I know. It's but you know what's amazing?
And this is what happened after the first book.
Yeah,
Never, ever, 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 ever intended on there being a second book.
Oh,
never
boy.
Crossed my mind until people started coming out of the woodwork. And I never thought that there would be enough information.
Yeah.
I didn't take it seriously. And it kept growing like they say, like Topsy. I mean, it just it grew. And it's longer than the first book. I mean, how is that even possible? Because the first book had his biography.
I know. But the first book, I think what you did is you sort of opened that door in the first book. But I know what you're saying. You'd think that the biography would be a bigger book. But I think once you put that out there, it just opened the floodgates, for lack of a better term, but in a good way.
Nuts. And then the stories and, oh, I wish I had known and da, 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 da. And I don't know. And now it's happening again. And this is just making me nuts.
I want to just say that Kelly Shanahan, who I don't have the pleasure of or honor of knowing, says hello, is watching. And he's mentioned, of course, in the book several times and has a great history with Jeff.
Kelly was kind enough. I hope he won't be upset if I tell this story. Kelly, forgive me. Kelly was reticent about talking to me. Kelly's relationship with Jeffrey was so personal, so close, so precious that, and he didn't know me from Adam. I mean, I understand completely that until he saw the first book, he didn't want any part of sharing his love of Jeff. I get it. There were a few people like that.
Yeah.
There were absolute, Kelly was not alone. There were a few people that were guarding their
relationship.
And I completely understand it because, you know, they didn't know how I was going to handle it. They didn't know if I was going to exploit Jeff or, you know, do something stupid or be disrespectful or, you know, they didn't know. So I am so thankful that Kelly took that leap of faith and bought the first book.
Mm.
In fact, to this day, he's the only one I know that actually found it at Barnes & Noble. God bless him. but I am so thankful that he chose to share his story because, you know what, John, it means so much to me that he could share their younger years. You know, those were really important years for Jeff and their relationship and their drum companionship, and all of that time together was really important time together. So I'm really grateful to Kelly for taking that chance and for trusting me with his memories. And thank you, Kelly. Thank you really a lot. And your brother. Thank you both for doing that, because I know that it probably means a lot to the readers, and it meant a lot to me.
Beautiful. Beautifully said, Robin. Yeah. And I agree. I think that added so much dimension to the book, having those early stories and those early recollections by, like, I think childhood friends add so much to, we all know, those of us that follow Jeff and followed his career, you know, there's a lot of well-documented stuff out there that we all know about, but those stories about his growing up and his, you know, when he was a kid and his band and rehearsing at the house and, man, it's great stuff.
That's where somebody develops their whole being. I mean, you know, between their family and their youth. I mean, that's the stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's important.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you if you know the answer to this question.
Go ahead.
Well, in the interest of kind of what we talked about, which is just sort of diving into the book and diving into, you know, more things, you know, Jeff type things that weren't Steely Dan related is what I was trying to say. Although we'll talk about Steely Dan as well, but Gary really just helped us down that road so perfectly and comfortably. I always thought, and I still think, that Jeff's first sort of major recording was Diamond Girl, Seals and Crofts. No. Okay.
Nope.
It wasn't.
But he played on the record.
He did. Okay.
Not the song. He did not play on the hit. That was Harvey Mason.
It was Harvey Mason. Okay. It's funny. It's
a big room. I mean,
people
get it wrong all the time.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, David Page was on it.
Yep. Yep. Thank you for clarifying that. Okay. Yeah. I've heard many people say that, and it was not real clear where I looked it up on the interweb, and you never know what's true and what's not true. So thanks for clarifying that.
I have checked it out over and over again, and I've verified it completely, mm-hmm. completely verified with Louis Shelton, the producer. I've gone all over to make sure that it's verified.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good to know. And Harvey Mason. I mean, come on.
Yeah. It's Harvey.
Yeah. Yep. Not surprisingly. But Jeff is on the record on one or two other tracks, I think.
Yeah. And on tracks that were never hits.
Yeah. Yep.
That was not his time yet.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's fine, because he was not even 20 years old at that time, I think, about 18 or 19. So, yeah. All right.
Great. But that's where I believe he really got known by Louis. Louis Shelton would play a big part in his life, of course, with Boz Scaggs, and that was a big connection for him.
Yeah. Yep. I would love to just talk about a couple of sections in the book. One story is a very famous story that I'm sure many people watching and listening have heard this, because it's made its way around the drummer circles. And it's the Tommy Taylor story about recording Christopher Cross's Sailing. And I've heard Tommy tell it. I don't know Tommy personally, but I'm going to have him on my show at some point, too, if he wants to come on, because he has such a great story. But I would love, you know, it's so well told by Tommy and by you in the book, but I would love to get your take on it. And I think, if nothing else, to me, and it's another great example of Jeff's generosity, I guess, just in terms of respect for Tommy as a drummer and as a human, and maybe you could just talk about that for a second.
Yeah, Jeff, and it was not uncommon. I mean, when Jeff was hired to play for bands that had drummers, that was not a comfortable situation for him. He didn't really understand it. If they were good enough to be the drummer of the band, I mean, he did understand intellectually that a recording drummer does have different chops. I mean, intellectually get that, but he didn't feel yet he did feel like there were some of the drummers who were good enough to play those tracks, and that some of the leaders were just looking for the reputation of the drummer. And I think he felt that way about Tommy. I think he believed that Tommy was good enough to play the tracks.
Yeah. Yep.
I wasn't there and I can't get inside Jeff's head, but from what I gather of the story, and look, it turned out to be true. We'll never know if he didn't play it wrong on purpose. I mean, how many times did Jeff not play a track perfectly?
Right.
He didn't play it perfectly. And Tommy got a second swipe at it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how many times does that happen? Tommy admits that he wasn't a session guy. He admits that things came slower in the studio. But they were a bar band, and they played these things, and he didn't understand why there had to be, guys who were called in. And I don't think Jeff understood that either.
Yeah.
So all in all, I really did not like Christopher Cross or whatever his name was by the end of the story. I got to tell you, I thought it was a really low blow that he ended up, well, I don't want to give the book away, but ended up at a dinner party where Christopher was not even at Christopher's house, where Christopher wasn't there.
Yeah.
Really low blow reasons.
Yeah. That was disappointing to read that part. Just because I love his music, and respect him as a musician, but to hear that, I'd like to segue by playing a little bit of the song in question that he was not at that dinner party for to record, that Jeff did record. So just to keep everybody on the same page with us, the song that we're referring to that Tommy ended up playing on, that Tommy was not replaced on, is I think it's Christopher Cross's first big hit, right? Was Sailing the first, I think it was. Yeah. And it's, and I've often said this, and I said this to Tommy on Facebook, and just when I had seen a post about it, I think it's some of the most incredible epic drumming ever. I mean, like, just Tommy should be proud for the rest of his life on the work he did on that song. It's just so amazing. Yeah. And, ignorantly, me personally, I thought it was Jeff. I could have easily accepted it was Jeff because of how clean and smooth and precise and tasteful it is. So
that's my landline. I'm sorry. I meant to disconnect it, but
that's okay. That's all right. You're busy, but I'm going to play a song that Jeff did record with Christopher Cross that is a fabulous song, and I'm sure everybody's going to know this song. And the story goes that he did in fact in the end use Jeff in some studio session players for this track. So.
Once in your life, you find her, someone who turns your heart around, and next thing you know, you're closing down the town. Wake up and it's still with you, even though you left your way across town, wondering to yourself, hey, what have I found?
So much of what he did, it's not that it's intangible, but it was always the most perfect thing that you could play. And the great thing about reading your book is, in every instance when you've talked to a producer or the artist themselves, they tell you the same thing, that he knew exactly what to do. He didn't have to have someone say, "Hey, Jeff, in this section, I want you to lay back. And then in this section, I want you to do this. And then in the B, you know, in the B verse, we're going to," he just always knew what to play.
I think one of the funniest stories in this second book is, and someone actually messaged me about it, because it's funny. I mean, it's poignant and funny. is the Bill the Bounty story of him telling how he learned the hard way that he shouldn't tell Jeff what to do. Because even Larry Carlton took him aside and said, hey,
yeah,
we're in the studio with Jeff. We just let him tell us what to do. That's Larry Carlton.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, he told the story much better than I'm telling the story, but lesson learned.
Right, exactly. No, you know, I was thinking about this morning, and I'm sure you've thought about this too. The fact that, you know, he started his recording career around, for all intents and purposes, around 1972. Would that be about accurate?
Yeah.
He was 18.
Yeah.
And we lost him in 1992. So in those 20 years, he recorded so much music. We all know he was busy. He was the busiest guy in LA, you know, and it's just incredible. It really is.
What he would have done.
Yeah. But you know what you just said, it's funny that I think Gary told the story on the last show about Ricky Lee Jones and Jeff in the studio with her
Another story for my third book.
Yes. So yeah, we'll save that.
The saga continues. For those who weren't listening,
is
that the continuation of a story that I never knew? Woo!
Yeah, wow. There's a great, for me, who lived in LA for a number of years and is very familiar with Leeds Rehearsal Studios, the whole connection with Jeff and the Leeds family.
Yeah.
Andy Leeds.
Yep.
And yeah, I had no idea. Like I had no idea how all that came about. And I just thought that was, I think for any musician and anybody who lives in LA or not even, you don't even have to live in LA. It's a great story in there.
Yeah. Cause everybody's heard of, you know, Toto was down at Leeds.
Yeah. Legendary spot in LA where all the top bands rehearse. And
to know also how, pardon the pun, instrumental Jeffrey was in helping them get their foothold.
Yeah.
Again, you know, the lives he has touched, just on and on and on and on.
Just an incredibly loyal friend, you know, just there's a great story. Rick Murata, who's my dear, dear friend, has told me this story already, but it was great that you have it in your book about when he, I think it was just when he moved to LA, but he used to go out there to work from New York and then finally made the move around 1983, I think it was. And, how Jeff just, you know, was a fan of his, I guess he tracked him down because of Rick playing on Peg, of course, and, was a big fan of that and created this loop that he would listen to.
Yes.
And they became great friends. And Rick often talks about his friendship with Jeff and the whole Perkower family and how Jeff, you know, was, and Robin, you've heard this a million times, I know, but you know, here he is like recommending other drummers for work in LA, which is just for the most part unheard of, you know, but, you know, Vinny crazy. Tells stories of that. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, crazy. I mean, Myron Grombacher said, he got his first session. I mean, it's just endless. The lives that he touched and gave to. It's just, I wish I could find the person that tells the story that he called Jeff out of nowhere and said, I'm your biggest fan. I just got into LAX. And Jeff said, hey, man, where are you? I'll come and get you. I heard that story. It's real somewhere.
Yeah.
He did this for somebody. He went down to the airport and picked him up.
That's just, yeah. I've heard those stories too, and it's just incredible. It really is. And I have no reason not to believe it. You know, yeah.
I don't either.
Yeah, there's a great photo you have in the book. This is the first time I met Jeff was at PASIC 1985 in LA. I just moved out there that summer. PASIC was in November, and I was working for Simmons Drums. And here's a picture of Jeff and Neil Sean watching Billy Cobham, as we all were, with our jaws on the floor, as you would be watching Billy. And Tony Williams was at that PASIC too, I believe. And it was just a crazy drummer fest. But I remember seeing Jeff had come by the booth. He was his son, probably his oldest son.
Yeah.
Yeah. And anyway, he came by the booth and I went over and introduced myself, and he was so nice. And so one of my coworkers, my friend Rob Davenport, said to me, you know, he's not interested in Simmons. He's not going to, don't waste your time. I said, well, I just want to go talk to him. He's like, yeah. But he was so nice and he was so polite. And he was like, yeah, man, I'm kind of done with the electronic thing right now, man. I'm kind of over that scene. And then a year later I was at DW and we connected again, a better bond that way. But he was just, I just remember he just being in his presence was, you know, it was otherworldly. It really was. It was just
very charismatic.
Yeah. There was like this glowing thing. Yeah. It was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He just, whatever that it thing was.
Yeah.
You hear about the it girls. He was the it guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I if you'll permit me, and then we're going to talk more about your book, but I might have told you this story, but when I was at DW, we were distributing Dynacord drums. Electronic drums. And David Page was using this Leslie simulator thing that Dynacord made. And I think he actually endorsed it. And Toto sort of had this endorsement with Dynacord we provided stuff through Dynacord for them. And Jeff was willing to try one of these electronic pads, a pad with a brain. It was a nice little unit. And so I called him to talk about sending it to him. And then while I'm on the phone, Don Lombardi said to me, tell him about the new improved linkage system for our double pedal. And it was a big deal at the time. You know, the double pedal was, Don was always making improvements. And Jeff famously only played a single pedal. He was not a double bass drum, double pedal guy. So I just remember, being on the phone with him and saying, and by the way, you know, Don wanted me to just let you know we've really improved the double pedal and it's really great. And I can send one of those or I can drop it off at your house. And he started laughing or something. He said, oh man, no, man, you know, I don't play those double pedals, man. He said, I can't even play, you know, he's like, I can't even play one pedal. I'm like, are you kidding me? And he's like, my left foot, man, I'm playing, I'm doing the best I can playing the hi-hat with my left foot. I can't play a double pedal. And I just remember it was so genuine and so sincere, his humility, you know, he was like, man, I'm not one of those cats. Vinny's the cat for that, you know, or Steve Smith or something. But he's like, that's not me, man. I can't do that.
Oh, my Jeffrey.
Yeah. I know. And it just made you want to be around him more, you know, it just made you want to be in his presence more. He was just.
I get it.
So that special.
That was him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I had noted the Myron story. I thought that was such a great story about, you know, bumping into him at Gelson's, I think it was, he said.
Guitar Center.
Oh, Guitar Center. Sorry, Guitar Center. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he goes, yo, Myron, you know, like.
And Myron's going, he knows who I am?
Yeah.
I was like, whoa.
I know. And totally picture it. Yeah, totally. He seemed like he was so dialed into everybody, like just kind of like was. Yeah, yeah.
He did. He was. He seemed to have his pulse on all of it. And you wonder how when he was so busy to know everybody's albums, everybody's music. You kind of expect that if he went on a session that maybe he did a little homework beforehand so he would know who the artist was. And But to run, see a Myron Grombacher in a store and know exactly, you know, I mean, I guess you couldn't get away from them on MTV at the time, yeah. But nonetheless.
Yeah, I know. And there was no mistaking Myron, of course.
Definitely had a look.
Red hair, yeah. Flaming red hair. But by the way, Mercy Baron is watching. And
hi, yeah. Mercy. She Fantastic. Had a great story. We even used her semi-blurry photo because it was so cool. Yeah. And she had a great, you know, great stuff to talk about with, my God, Jeff again, kindness. She was supposed to be, you know, the leader of the drum corps. And he felt bad because he came in and swept the head guy away, the coach, the director. And he told her, oh, okay, I'll just be it in name only.
Yeah.
And you really be it. And I'll just, you know, do the drills and, you know, but you were really the one.
Yeah.
And I mean, always thinking about the other person and their feelings. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I'm sure very uncomfortable being in those situations, like we talked about with Tommy Taylor and in the case of Mercy, where like someone had worked hard to get to this position and then he was so talented and so great that people would go, well, let's, you know, but he didn't feel comfortable with that. Yeah.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. It's an amazing soul. As Mercy said, he was an old soul. He absolutely was just an old soul at it. And, you know, and they were kids when they met.
Yeah.
And he already had that old soul.
Yeah. He wasn't feeling. Even a famous, you know, Toto drummer. He was just a good guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, you know, like I want to just talk about for a second. There's a, you know, Don Henley's story that,
Barely.
The first record he did with Don Henley, which was Dirty Laundry, right? It was Don's first solo record. And I see if I'm on the right page here, but I loved how you talked to Jeff about it in a subsequent interview directly with Jeff. And he referred to playing along to the Lynn machine and then slamming or something, right? Didn't he refer to what he played as slamming? And I've always loved that song, Rob, and I listened to it this morning out in my run. You know, I was just like listening to a bunch of these songs, and I wish I could slam like that. And I think a lot of us drummers wish we could. You know, it's the furthest thing from slamming in my mind. It's just so perfect and precise, and it's so Jeff. And I thought maybe we'd play a little bit of that too, if that's
go for it.
Yeah. So this is, of course, the famous Don Henley hit song Dirty Laundry, and it's a Lynn drum machine, which was of course very popular at the time of this recording, 1981, 82, I guess it was 82. And then Jeff comes in on top of that and plays along to the Lynn. And Don says in his interview with Robin in the book, you know, he makes a point of talking about Jeff's incredible time, which there's just no getting around. You can't talk about Jeff Beccaro without talking about his incredible, incredible time like no one else. So here it comes.
Sheesh.
I guess the point of all this is just like playing a song like that. He was such a versatility is not even the right word for it. He was like a chameleon in that he could play, you know, a song with that, just a strong backbeat. I remember he described it to you in the book. You talk about it in the book, the way he described it is, I'm playing the bass drum on one and just slamming on the snare drum, you know, in two and four. But it's so much more than that. It's the feel.
Well, you think he's going to applaud his time.
Right. I know. Yeah.
In a million years, because of, you know, you remember the famous quote, my time sucks.
Yes. Yeah, I do. Yeah. That was from like a PIT or something clinic, right? Or something where he's probably said it.
Modern Drummer interview. It was
one of yours. Okay. Yeah.
My time sucks.
My time sucks.
I mean, yeah. And that was immortalized by, you know, stupidity. I mean, I don't even know what else to say, except that everyone still talks about that quote.
Yeah, yeah. And I know in the book somewhere, and he's said it many times where, and Gary, of course, put that to rest in the last episode, but Jeff made reference to not being a good reader. I don't really read much or something. And, you know, yeah. And Vinny told me the same thing. He said, oh yeah, he could read as well as anyone.
I talk about it in the book with his brother.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's.
Yeah, I know. He just.
He just, I don't know what was wrong with his brain.
I think he didn't like people making a fuss about him. I think he really was uncomfortable with it, you know, and I it makes you love him even more, you know. It just, it's that much more endearing about him that, yeah, I think if, it, you know, it was probably, right, it was probably easier for him to go, no, I'm really not that good. I can't really read. My time really isn't good.
And I don't like anything I've ever played on.
Yeah. I know.
I can't listen to anything I ever played on. I mean, it's absurd. It's just absurd.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's play a couple more songs if you don't mind.
Oh,
we're kind of on a nice roll here. And again, folks, I'll keep pushing this book because all of this is contained within the book. Pretty much everything we're talking about in much greater detail you can read about in this book. From the artists that recorded these songs that Jeff recorded with. So highly recommend it, but I'm going to play one of my favorite songs and I won't maybe play the entire thing, but again, it's a great example of it's almost the opposite of what we just heard with Don Henley. And it's certainly one of his contemporaries, of course, the legendary Jackson Browne, and the song is The Pretender. Yeah.
And that's talked about in the first book.
In the
Jackson
first book,
talks
yeah.
about it, and it is shocking to hear Jackson talk about it. Because actually, if I might say, Jackson yes. told me that Jeff's part changed his lyrics.
That's right.
Yeah. Pretty profound.
Pretty profound. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just want to, as an observation and as a drummer, when this song came out in 1978, I remember my sister, who's 5 years older than me, I was 18, a huge Jackson Browne fan. I remember she had this album, and I remember reading Jeff Porcaro on this song, which was my favorite song in the album, but the whole album is fantastic. Mm. And Jim Gordon is on a track or two as well. And I think maybe even Keltner or Russ Kunkel for sure. Russ was his main drummer. But I will just say that it was not long after this that I discovered this new band called Toto that came out at the end of 78, early 79, with a song called Hold the Line. And lo and behold, here's this young-looking kid with glasses playing the ever-living shit out of the drums, and his name was Jeff Porcaro. And I'm like, that's the same guy. I remember I'll just say this, Robin. It was like one of those moments where I remember seeing Gary Malibur's name on a bunch of records as a kid and going, that's the same guy that played with Jackson Browne in early records, Van Morrison, and, you know, and now he's in the Steve Miller Band. This guy's everywhere. Yeah. So Anyway,
yeah, those moments, we remember those moments. Yeah.
It was, and I think that's a bulb went off in my head as an 18-year-old. Like, this is a guy that I want to try to find more records that this guy has played on. And Silk Degrees had been out for a couple of years at that point, and I realized that was Jeff on that, which we'd all been listening to. So, just amazing. So here comes The Pretender, Jackson Browne, from the record The Pretender.
I'm gonna rid myself of house in the shade of the freeway. Gonna pack my lunch in the morning and go to work each day. And when the evening rolls around, I'll go on home and lay my body down. And when the morning light comes streaming in, I'll get up and do it again. Amen. Say it again. I wanna know what became of the changes we waited for love to bring. Were they only the fitful dreams of some greater awakening? I've been aware of the time going by. They say in the end it's the wink of an eye. Come streaming in, you'll get up and do it again. Amen. Caught between the longing for love and the struggle for the legal tender, where the sirens sing and the church bells ring and the junk man pounds his fender. Sleep at the traffic light, and the children solemnly wait for the ice cream vendor. Out into the cool of the evening strolls the pretender. He knows that all his hopes and dreams begin and end there. A girl who can show me what laughter means, and we'll fill in the missing colors in each other's paint by number dreams. And then we'll put our dark glasses on and we'll make love until our strength is gone. When the morning light and we're streaming in, get up and do it again. Get it up again. I'm gonna be a happy idiot and struggle for the legal tender. True love.
Are you there? Say a prayer for the pretender who started out so young and strong, only to surrender.
Yeah,
so
that's so great. That fill that he plays at the end, I was going to point that out to all the drummers watching and listening. I'm sure they heard it, and if they've heard that song before, I'm sure they've noticed it. It's just such an incredible Jeff thing at the end there that he does. It's so great. I was going to ask you at the very beginning of this, are you going to do another book? And I don't want to put you on the spot, but but I would love to have it be breaking news on my show if there is going to be another.
I have no plans, John.
Okay. All right. Okay. All
but
right.
I'll tell you what, if people keep writing me with new stories, I can't be responsible for my sanity.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. Well, as we sort of wind things down, Robin, I want to invite you to talk about anything you'd like to highlight in the book. And then we could play a little bit more. There's plenty of music to play.
I've really done a good job at highlighting. I just want to just say thank you for everybody who has participated in both my books, because, like I said, there were people the first time around who weren't sure. There were people I couldn't get a hold of, so they finally were available to, you know, family members, to his close friends, to all the wonderful people, to all the Toto people, to, you know, some of the people who shared never before seen photos. I mean, his road manager, Chris Littleton, shared personal travel photos. Andy Leeds, that you mentioned before, went on, you know, Japanese tours with them and went through his personal photo albums and shared personal photos that had never been seen. I was just incredibly fortunate to have the support that I had. I just, you know, but it's not about me, you know, it's for Jeff.
Yeah.
Because people love Jeff. I love Jeff. So it's all for that.
I think what you've done is so important to the future generations of drummers.
And that's the other reason I do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause
thank
you.
You
know, I mean, everybody here now knows Jeff, but I don't know, you know, when I leave the planet, when my son's generation leaves the planet, you know, who's going to be here?
Yeah.
And I want to make sure, I mean, that people, I just want him to live on forever.
And he will. And he will. Thanks to you. He absolutely will. And thank you for doing this, because I think it's such a great service to not just drummers, but to everybody, to all musicians. Stanley
Sheldon.
You want
to know something? I got to tell you just a quick funny.
Yes. Yes.
Quick. Yes. The principal at my children's junior high school, with whom I had a few contentious little things, became my Facebook friend several years back. Don't ask me why, but he did. And of course, my kids are grown up now, but he went out and he bought the jazz. He loved music. I will give him that. He always went to the music programs, which my kids were in, of course.
Yeah.
And he was at every one of them. But in the meanwhile, he did respect the fact that I was a music journalist. And even though we fought about things and my kids, who were always good, they were never in the principal's office. But nonetheless, he went out and bought one of these books. And he recently wrote to me on Messenger. And he said, I got to tell you, I never knew about Toto much. And I certainly never knew about Jeff Porcaro. But I have loved your book. And I have loved learning about Jeff Porcaro. And I really think it's well written, coming from a principal. Yeah. And I've really enjoyed every minute of learning about something new. So I just was over the moon.
Oh, somebody that's so great.
Completely out of the realm of this sphere.
That's, you couldn't ask for a bigger endorsement, you know? I mean, like totally unsolicited. Yeah, completely out of the blue. And
crazy,
someone
that, crazy.
Yeah, the last person you probably expected to hear from.
Never.
So. That's so great. That's so great.
I really liked that. And so I think it could be of interest to just about any. I mean, if it's of interest to him, it's of interest to anybody.
Yeah.
You got to like music.
Something I learned from this book, Robin, that I never knew was that Jeff, and I hope I got this right, that he played on the 1976 hit song. Again, he would have been 21, 22 maybe. Welcome Back, the theme from Welcome Back, Cotter.
Yeah.
Sebastian. That's him. I mean, that blows my mind that
I know.
At such a young age, I mean, that was like it was probably a number one. I mean, he's on a lot of number one songs, I know, but that I that's one thing. I met John Sebastian years ago. What a kind man. And I told him the story how I'd seen him with a Lovin' Spoonful at on the Ed Sullivan Show when I was 6 years old. And anyway, he was so funny and so nice. And then I'm just reading your book and I'm like, wait a minute. Wow. So I'm going to play a minute of this, but, I think this is huge because this was such a massive hit song. And I'll just say that when I met John Sebastian, he was saying how he'll forever be remembered for this song and not all the songs that the Lovin' Spoonful wrote in the 60s that you and I remember. Do You Believe in Magic and Summer in the City
and
all those great songs. But, but this is, he said, you know, that's, you know, for bad or good, this is going to be what people remember me for.
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out. Welcome back to that same old place that you laughed about. Well, the names have all changed since you hung around, but those dreams have remained and they've turned around. Who'd have thought they'd lead ya?
Who'd have thought they'd lead ya?
Back here where we need ya.
Back here where we need ya.
Yeah, we tease him a lot, 'cause we got him on the spot. Welcome back.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back.
Welcome back. We always could spot a friend. Welcome back. And I smile when I think how you must have been. And I know what a scene you were learning in. Was there something that made you come back again? Ever lead ya?
What could ever lead ya?
Back here where we need ya.
Back here where we need ya.
Yeah, we tease him a lot, 'cause we got him on the spot. Welcome back.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back.
you know, a fun little song. And you know, Jeff would probably tell you that it's, you know, simple song. But, you know, he knew exactly what to play. It was just he stayed out of the way. It was just played great time at a time when, you know, we talk about this all the time, but it was the time in studios where you had to do it right. They couldn't fix it later with Pro Tools or any of that stuff. Yeah. You had to get a great take. And, you know, it's just a little piece of trivia, if nothing else, for people.
And history.
And history, yeah, yeah. A couple of more quick examples of just his versatility. This song is a Toto song that I think was written to fill. They were putting out a greatest hits record, Past to Present. And this song, Out of Love, I think was written for that greatest hits. Does that sound right to you?
I think that's right.
Yeah, and I think it came out around 1990. And I'll just play a couple of minutes. It's a beautiful ballad. And again, for all the drummers watching and listening, this is, to me, it exemplifies Jeff's time, his feel, his ability to sit behind the beat. He plays at such a slow tempo, and it grooves, and it feels incredible. Impossible for most drummers to play a song like this and execute it the way that he does. And he did this sort of thing so often and so effortlessly. And I'll just make one more point about this. Personally, I bought this record because it had a whole bunch of hit songs on it. And back in, you know, in the days where you put a CD on and you listen to, you know, from start to finish. And this was one of these songs that grew on me incredibly, because initially it was like, well, yeah, I like what Jeff's doing. And then it became like one of my favorite songs because it's just such a beautiful song. Anyway, here it comes. It's called Out of Love. It's on Toto Past to Present. I don't think it's on a studio record, but you can find this certainly on iTunes. Oh, I apologize. I wasn't ready to go with that. Let's try this. Take two. Such a beautiful song, and I'll just make the comment that I think, and I welcome any other drummers or anybody else's opinion on this, but as incredible as Jeff played and sounded with all the artists that he worked for, you could tell he was really most comfortable, and well, not most comfortable, but with Toto, he was like in a whole different place. You know, he was, yeah.
I think everybody, even David Foster made that comment in the book. I mean, I think his heart and soul, he just felt that way.
Yeah.
It was, yeah.
Yeah. And the fact that, you know, it's a known story that he turned down the Springsteen tour, excuse me, in the summer of 1992 because Toto was going to go on the road to support Kingdom of Desire and, turned down a huge payday with Bruce at that time, out of his loyalty to the band. And because that says so much about him that, you know, $1 million in 1992, what that is worth in today's dollars. And he turned it down, you know, and I'm going to just play just talking about Bruce. I'm going to play a moment of Bruce. This is such a beautiful recording. I'll play a little bit of this and we'll close it out with something that I think everybody will remember, but this is Human Touch.
You and me, we were the pretenders. We let it all slip away. In the end, what you don't surrender, well, the world just strips away. Girl, ain't no kindness in the face of strangers. We ain't gonna find no miracles here. Well, you can wait on your blessings, my darling. I got a deal for you right here. Just a little of that human touch. Ain't no mercy on the streets of this town. Ain't no bread from heavenly skies. Ain't nobody drawing wine from this blood. It's just you and me tonight. Tell me in a world without pity, do you think what I'm asking's too much? I just want something to hold on to, and a little of that human touch, just a little of that human touch.
Yeah, nobody played a cross stick like Jeff. No one could just could cover the dynamic range the way he did. It's, I just marvel at it, you know, when I listen to these songs, and I appreciate them more and more every time, you know. It's more, I hear things, I think like a lot of drummers, you know, you listen intently and then you hear things you never heard before and you go like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize he was doing that right there, you know. And he's a gift that all these years later he keeps giving us music.
An inspiration.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I'm going to close it out here. There was one more story I was going to mention, and we might have talked about this before, I think, but I'm going to repeat it. And it's our dear friend Greg Bissonette. It's great how he recounts meeting Jeff for the first time. And then another story, because we're talking about the fact that it's Joe's birthday today, Joe Porcaro's birthday, and meeting Joe at a Jerry Lewis telethon. And it was late the fall of 1982. Rosanna, of course, was all over the airwaves. And I just want to quickly say, at that time, I was working in a music store in 1982 in Boston, E. Wurlitzer. And it truly is the case where that song became like the stairway to heaven for drummers. You know, like you'd hear on a Saturday in the guitar department, people playing the opening chords to Stairway to Heaven or Smoke in the Water, you know. And Rosanna became that. People would get behind the drums and try to play that beat. And of course, no one did it like Jeff, but read Greg's quote.
Story.
Yeah. Hey, Mr. Porcaro, what do you think of this? And he began to play Rosanna. Greg laughs at the memory. He started smiling and nodding his head like, yeah, every drummer in the world is trying to play Rosanna like Jeff. And in his great classy way, he said, pretty close. I could hear Joe. Yeah. Pretty close. Yeah.
Close.
he didn't want to offend a young up and coming drummer, Greg Bissonette, you know, but no, I mean, you know, that's a song again that I'll just say that you could hear that song 100 times and each time you appreciate it more because of it's such a legendary song. I'm going to play a little bit, and all you drummers, good luck trying to play this song is all I can say.
She's gone. she's gone, and I have to say,
it's only fitting that Luke would close it out like only Luke can close it out in the end. Man. I want to just point out to everybody watching and listening at home, listen to this song again if you have it at home in your iTunes or your Spotify. At 5 minutes and like 2 or 3 seconds, you hear this voice go, Luke is, when he starts to take off in his solo, you hear this voice go, "Hey!" And I'm certain it's Jeff. It's got to be him. It's that low barreling voice that he had, you know, and it's I pointed it out to my son when he was about 5 years old once, and every time we'd hear it, we'd listen to it, he'd, "Here it comes, Dad, here it comes."
And
anyway, yeah, he's you know, one of Jeff's biggest fans as well. Robin,
I miss him.
Yeah, well, I'm so thrilled and honored to have you come back and talk to me and share your stories and talk about this great book, Moments in Time.
Thank you for your support, John. Thank you. And thank you for loving Jeff along with me. And thank you for, you know, all of it. Thank you for
absolutely
being all these years and all your support for always.
I want to thank David Garfield for sending me this shirt many years ago, knowing that I was a big fan of Jeff's, and just reached out to me and said, "Hey, man, give me your address. I want to send you one of these shirts." So thank you, David. Creech. Yeah.
David Garfield's in the book, too.
He sure is. Yes. Yes. Well, when we do part three of this show, when you come out with your third book, we'll talk about David, too. Yeah, he's in there. All right. Robin, thank you so much.
Love you so much. Thank
love you,
you
too. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for watching and listening. Big hand for Robin Flans. Hudson Music is where you can get these books, so go get them. And Robin, hang with me if you would for 1 second, and we'll say goodbye in the room. Thanks, everybody. Hey, everybody. John DeChristopher here, and I want to thank you for watching and listening to Live from My Drum Room. I started this show in April of 2020. And it's now 4 years and almost 200 episodes later. And I'm excited to tell you about my new Live from My Drum Room t-shirts. In fact, I'm wearing one right now. Made of 60% cotton, 40% polyester, a really soft cotton blend. I'm wearing a size medium. And you can have yours for $25, including shipping, in the contiguous U.S. I will give you my Venmo information, which I'll also include in the description. There's my Venmo information, and you can email me at livefrommydrumroom@gmail.com with any questions, and that will also be in the description. So get your shirt while they last. They're available in extra small to double XL. I do have limited quantities of the extra smalls and the double XLs, but plenty of everything else. So once again, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. And don't forget to pick up your Live From My Drum Room t-shirt. See you soon. And remember, no drummers are harmed on any show. All right, well, that's my show. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, give it a like. Leave me a comment. Don't forget to subscribe to my YouTube channel if you haven't done that already. And the podcast is available on all the podcast platforms, so download it. And remember, no drummers are ever harmed on Live From My Drum Room or Track Talk. And drummers, when in doubt, leave it out. All right. Again, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. And I'll see you again real soon. See ya.